It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The morning after the spring general election and the record-shattering Supreme Court race, we make space for your reaction to the results. Judge Jana Protasiewicz prevailing over former Supreme Court Justice Dan Kelly. Your questions, they're front and center about the future of Wisconsin politics. The number to talk, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Lily Gorin is here, professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. Lily, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me on this morning, Kate. It's great to be here.
Well, it felt like the whole nation was watching to see how the Supreme Court race would turn out. What is your reaction to Protasiewicz's victory here?
Well, I mean, I was surprised by actually how big the spread is. Wisconsin voters turned out in record numbers for an off-year election in a strange time of the year. And in Wisconsin, I also have been telling people we vote a lot. We vote frequently, which also can lead to people being less engaged. But that was certainly not the case in this particular race. And so a 10-point spread in Wisconsin is huge in large measure because we are a fairly, sort of tightly balanced state. And so when I saw, the race called a lot earlier than I expected, and also in continuing to refresh my numbers, that 10-point spread remained in place more or less, those were surprising results to me.
Well, political scientists keep an eye on the wow counties. The Waukesha, Outagamie, Washington is kind of that diagnostic tool on our shade of purple, if you will. Is there anything notable out of wow from last night? Because Kelly seemed to have quite a hold on those counties.
Yeah, and again, I think that they were a little bit closer than expected. And obviously, I know perhaps a little bit more about Waukesha and pay a little bit more attention in Waukesha County than the O and the W and the other W.
Yeah.
Not to diss them, because I'm not. but that, I do think that the race was not as sort of lopsided in Kelly's favor in the Wow counties this time around.
Well, with Protasiewicz winning, what does that mean for how the court could handle key issues?
It is a court made up of, not just Janet Protasiewicz. She will be joining six other jurors, I believe, on the court. And so there are cases that, have been sort of sitting, waiting for this race to transpire, before there were moves to sort of move forward on them. And of course, this particularly involves the 1800 law with regard to abortion rights in Wisconsin. So I have a feeling that case will likely move forward to the courts and end up probably in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court at some point, as well as some questions about the electoral maps in Wisconsin. I have a feeling that at least those two cases are likely to move in front of the court this term once she is sworn in, which doesn't happen for a number of months now.
Right, because she serves a 10-year term starting in August, and that makes me wonder, what happens in the meantime on the court? What is this transition period like?
Well, I mean, I think as far as I understand it, the court continues to operate and as it will, but that some cases will, sort of be held back until she moves onto the court, and the process sort of will involve her as one of the deciding jurors, as opposed to wait to moving forward before she's on the court.
Talking about the results of the spring election with Carroll University political science professor Lily Gorin, you can join in with your reaction, what you saw at the polls, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Steve in Sun Prairie. Steve, hi. What's on your mind the morning after?
Yeah, I just want to know what the guests' feelings are about the media and how they handled the allegations of Janet abusing her husband, as well as being a racist, where even NPR would not allow guests to ask questions of Janet when she was on, but now after the election is obviously perfectly fine with the questions being asked. Curious what the guests' thoughts are.
Steve, thank you. Lily, go ahead.
I do not know about the allegations that Steve is talking about, which may go to his point with regard to the media. But I don't really have more to say about that, not knowing many details about this, what he is talking about.
I want to turn to the 2024 presidential election. How critical is this ideological shift in the run-up to 2024, and what comes after? How could that affect the presidential election?
Well, I think that this was one of the reasons also why there was a lot of national attention on this particular Supreme Court race in Wisconsin. Given that Wisconsin has been a very closely contested state in the presidential elections for a long time now, it's not just in the last couple of cycles, but, you know, it was sort of very contested in a so-called purple state, that there were some issues with regard to the Supreme Court certifying the electors and certifying the election according to the outcome in 2020. And there was a lot of concern with regard to what the court's makeup would be in 2024 if there is another, you know, very closely contested election, which I assume there will be, and the role of the court in terms of certifying the election as it reflects the outcome of the voters. And so I think that that was something that was really drawing a lot of attention from national media and the parties. And this was, of course, I believe the most expensive state Senate race in history. And I think part of it was around that particular issue.
Can we spend a moment there on the most expensive judicial race in history? What does this money that's poured in, the race was flooded with outside money into a single justice on the high court. What does that say about the integrity of the court and the expectations on the court?
Well, I mean, it also goes to highlight the fact that while the judicial races are said to be nonpartisan, that the courts themselves are, in fact, you know, partisan participants in the political system, particularly the case when you do have elections. You know, people are voting for a justice, and in this case, certainly voting for a justice that reflects their particular political perspectives or political perspectives that they are supporting. And so I think that that's a lot of what we're looking at, is the fact that the courts, while we would like them to sort of be in our imaginary space, nonpartisan, and, you know, you put on the robe and you become, you know, somebody who doesn't have any opinions. The fact is that justices have opinions, and they often come through, not just in the Wisconsin courts, but, you know, across the nation on the Supreme Court and so forth.
Lily Gorin, political science and global studies professor at Carroll University in Waukesha, unpacking spring general election. And you can call in with your questions, your reaction to the election, what you observed at your polling place. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The morning after the spring general election, getting your reaction, your takeaways on results, what has transpired. Be part of the conversation by calling in with your questions or thoughts at any point, 800-642-1234. Political science and global studies professor at Carroll University, Lily Gorin, is here. Let's bring in a caller, Lisa in Madison. Lisa, I understand you worked the polls.
Yeah, I did. Just as with the midterms, I was assigned to a campus voting site. And just as with the midterms, the kids showed up in overwhelming numbers. I think the site that I was at this time, there were roughly 1,450 eligible voters that could have come in. We closed at 1,013. They're averaging better than the state, and that was similar across all of the campus sites that we kind of heard from. And, you know, I would just add that in 2022, there was a lot of talk that the kids just came in to vote because they were hoping for student loan relief. And clearly that wasn't on the issue this time. And these Gen Z kids are aware and they're active and they're voting and they're speaking out. And I was really proud that they all showed up like that.
Lisa, thank you so much for that firsthand glimpse there. Lily Gorin, aware, active, and showed up.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I have students that I was working with yesterday, and I had one student, one of my classes, who asked me if he could leave early so he could run back home to vote. And so a lot of my students were also quite energized. I also had students who were working on both campaigns, both Supreme Court campaigns. And so they were also engaged and, you know, doing door knocking and also, you know, working with the campaigns and going to some of the parties, if you will, in the evening. And so I think the caller is correct in terms of the Gen Z voters are engaged and they are turning out. And I do think that for a number of people, issues around reproductive rights may have been something that was a motivating factor, and a variety of other topics that were discussed throughout the campaign.
I want to turn to Wisconsin Senate District 8 here, where we had Republican State Representative Dan Knodel and Democratic Attorney Jody Habesh-Sinikin. Knodel's made that victory speech at last check. Habesh-Sinikin was waiting for all results to come in. But what do you make of this? Perhaps now we've got a supermajority, although AP hasn't called the race, Knodel victory, if it would give the Republicans the 22nd vote they need to have a supermajority in the Senate. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, it allows for the legislature to essentially potentially subsume the governor in a lot of ways. And this is one of the issues that the Democrats in the state have, you know, been pushing and campaigning against. I had been following this race quite closely as well. And I think the vote differential at this point is about 1,000 votes, possibly. So I don't know if that will require a recount or not to get the final results. But I think it does mean that the Republicans in the Senate and the Assembly will be able to sort of move forward on legislation that they would like to see implemented.
This district, north of Milwaukee, was previously held by a Republican. Alberta Darling vacated. Does the result say anything about the direction of this region's politics?
Well, I mean, again, this is a sort of a county that is, or excuse me, a district that has been drawn to, you know, sort of be even a little bit safer Republican district than it had been in the past. And so I think that the issue around sort of drawing safer districts is one that we've already talked about in terms of the electoral map that may come before the Supreme Court. I also understand that Knodel has discussed already potentially moving to try to impeach Justice Protasiewicz. So that is another dimension of having a supermajority in the Senate that we may see come into play.
I think his words were he would, quote, certainly consider supporting impeachment proceedings against Protasiewicz. What would that step mean?
You know, again, at this point, we haven't seen a lot of impeachment moves recently with regard to justices. Obviously, this is something that can also be done at the national level in terms of the sort of means of removing lifetime appointment justices. But again, we have it in the capacity of our Constitution that, you know, you can impeach justices, but usually there has to be reason, and there also has to be agreement to move forward with that. So remains to be seen exactly how and when that will unfold.
Carroll University political science professor Lily Gorin, our guide to the spring election, and your takeaways, 800-642-1234. Mark in Madison now. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Good question for the guest. I was curious whether, in her opinion, ranked choice voting with an instant runoff and, you know, final five or final four candidates might help to reduce partisanship in these spring elections and give voters more choices at the polls.
Thank you, Mark. Lily?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the idea behind ranked choice voting, and I have studied this a bit, and it does exist in a number of places already. I think Maine has it now, and a couple of other cities have it, that this does potentially provide for more candidates and also a potentially different dynamic in the campaign itself, because you don't want to have people alienated by you so that they will in fact rank you, if not first, then second, third, or fourth. And so that is one of the assets with regard to the idea of ranked choice voting, is that it does provide for, you know, voters to not necessarily be in a binary situation. And then the candidates have to sort of try to appeal to more voters, moving them beyond sort of a base of voters.
Something to watch there. Mark, thank you for that. I want to move on to these statewide ballot proposals that passed overwhelmingly. Can you talk about these initiatives and what they address, what you saw there in terms of their, you know, overwhelming passage?
Well, again, it seemed that, you know, Wisconsinites came out and they are in support of having judges have more capacity to sort of keep accused individuals in jail, not giving them bail or giving them very high bail if they are concerned that releasing this person on bail would be potentially dangerous to the public, so that the justices involved or the judges involved would have the capacity to do that. And there is also the issue around the non-binding decision or the non-binding sort of outcome, again, in the case of Wisconsinites voting on having able-bodied individuals be able to or required. Be required to search for work if they are receiving welfare from the state. But that is not that is, you know, sort of something that the legislature could now take up and have the voice of the Wisconsin populace behind them.
Leading up to the race, there was speculation on how these ballot measures were as a way to boost voter turnout for Republicans. Do you think they made a difference being on the ballot?
Well, I mean, they may have made a difference being on the ballot, but I also had heard from any number of people and the way that they were constructed in terms of how you were to vote on them was really confusing to voters.
The language and how it's drafted. Yeah. Can you go into that?
Well, I mean, this is where you have to sort of figure out if you want to vote no or yes on something. And it's kind of a double negative sort of situation. And I was getting texts from friends and colleagues who were saying that people where they were voting were just befuddled by what they were supposed to be voting for in the ballot initiatives. And this is one of the difficulties with regard to these kinds of initiatives. If they are not clear, then it is more difficult for voters to sort out, you know, which way they really want to vote. And so sometimes this is in fact used for that very reason.
we only have a couple seconds left. How does it feel to be a political scientist in this epicenter, in this environment in Wisconsin?
It can be a little bit trying sometimes, but being a political scientist in the last couple of years, particularly studying American politics, has been a little bit of a different experience than when I first started out.
such kind words. They're a little different. But
let's say that there are some administrations that take more energy.
Energy. Lily, thank you for joining us. Out of time here. Lily Corin, professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about Ramadan, which is underway.
1.8 billion Muslims all over the world observe the holy month of Ramadan. That includes the children at the Crescent Learning Center, an Islamic childcare center in Milwaukee. Reporter Christina Leffring tells us the center's founder strives to help refugee children and their parents feel at home during the holiday and through the rest of the year.
Crescent Learning Center is like any typical child care center. Kids play with clay.
It's a teddy bear.
They make gifts for Mother's Day.
It's a hug for your mom.
And, of course, there's Baby Shark. But it's also unique because this is an Islamic child care center. And it's the month of Ramadan, the holiest month of the year for Muslims.
The kids get excited about Ramadan.
That's Rafat Arain, the founder and director at Crescent Learning Center. The kids we just heard are too young to fast, which means no food or water from sunrise to sunset. But their families still wake up early to eat a big breakfast before sunrise and share a big feast at the end of the day when the sun sets. The whole community gathers in homes and at mosques to celebrate. And for the kids who are old enough to fast, it is a joyous rite of passage.
The parents do put more effort in making their favorite things, samosas and all those brownies and all of those the things that the kids love. It's exciting for the kids.
It's also a lesson in gratitude for what you have and empathy for those who have less than you.
There are so many people in this world that don't have any food. We are giving up this food out of choice, but a lot of people have no choice. They just don't have the food. So you feel their pain too. You have to feel the pain of hunger that a lot of people are going through.
Which may be closer to home than the children realize. Arain, who's originally from Pakistan, started working with refugees in 1993 when her family took in a family that had fled the war in Bosnia. Since then, she's worked to help each new wave of refugees resettle in Milwaukee. Somali, Burmese, Rohingya, and most recently, Afghan.
I think I have a weakness for the refugees somehow. I was never a refugee myself, but I just feel that it would be... I came to this country, I spoke English, I was educated, I didn't have to, you know, go through all of that. We are in this world for a purpose, not just to eat and drink and sleep and take care of ourselves. We have to do it for others. If I have this education, it's not for me to keep it to myself, it is to share it with others. That's everything that we have.
She decided to open the child care center when she saw refugee kids were falling behind in school. The center opens early and closes late to accommodate parents' work schedules. And during the pandemic, the center stayed open and staff helped the kids with virtual school. Arain's office is set up to welcome parents with tea, snacks, and a sofa where they can sit and talk. She's also hired staff from several refugee communities.
See, I have Burmese staff, I have Somali staff, I have Arabic staff, I have Moroccan staff. When those people come to me, I have translators over here. A lot of parents depend on me. They have problems. I have the sofa. They come. It's a good thing. Someday I might need help. God will send somebody for me.
Back in the classroom, children are encouraged to give to charity And as the teachers warm up their halal lunch, they remind the children to say Bismillah.
Say Bismillah!
A blessing before eating their rice and vegetables. Most of these children are too young to fast for Ramadan or to remember what their families went through when they left their home countries. But one day, they'll join millions of Muslims around the world as they remember to be grateful for the roof over their head, the food on their plate, and the people who've helped them call Milwaukee home.
Christina Leffring brought us that story on Ramadan and the Crescent Learning Center in Milwaukee. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The National Collegiate Gymnastics Association is the governing body for Division III women's gymnastics. The championships held recently in Winona, Minnesota, it was a UW sweep with the top three finishes. UW Stout in third, UW La Crosse in second, and UW Oshkosh's gymnastics team clinching the title. Call in with your questions, your thoughts on gymnastics, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Lauren Karnitz is head gymnastics coach at UW Oshkosh. Lauren, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Good morning. And Kaylee Burns is here on the team, a junior majoring in business management. Kaylee, welcome and congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Kaylee, so how does it feel to be a two-time national champion in college gymnastics?
It definitely feels amazing. It was a very surreal experience, and I think we're all just super grateful that we got to do it all again.
What made it so surreal?
I think there was just a lot of pressure, and going in, being the reigning national champs, made us kind of realize we knew how hard it was to win. And I think with how much hard work we put in the gym, it was just amazing to see it all pay off.
Lauren, what have you told your gymnasts walking into competitions with a championship on the line and to have that reigning title?
You know, at one point during the season, we were talking about how we're not the team from last year. We need to pave our own way. Yes, some of the members are the same. But then there was a flip probably around mid-February when I said, listen, this is our title to lose. Like, we are the defending national champions. We need to start acting like we're the defending national champions. I mean, everybody else has a lot more to prove than we do. At this point, you know, we actually are sitting on top. So let's start acting like it. Because at the beginning, we were a little more timid, like we had something to lose. And I get that idea that, we did. We were the defending national champions. We're on top. You know, sometimes people say there's nowhere but down from here, you know, because but you're up. But so we kind of flipped our coaching strategy to be like, you know, we are it. We are at the place that people want to be. You know, we talked a lot about being grateful and that kind of attitude, but also, you know, start being proud. Be proud of what the team did last year and put you in the position you're in now.
I wonder if that mindset shift midwinter made you see anything differently on the apparatus. I mean, did that translate into the gymnastics?
I think it changed the energy we brought and our athletes to bring to the gym every day. So between the coaching staff and the athletes, we asked them to bring this high energy every day. And from there on out, you know, we didn't lose. So,
Kaylee, I just want to get reaction from Kaylee there on that change in energy. Did you feel that mindset shift?
Yes, definitely. Especially with moving from being kind of timid, as Lauren said, to just giving it everything you have, like not holding back, trusting yourself. It was just more fun to go out there with the team and kind of be like, yeah, we can do this. Like, we got this.
And Lauren, this is not just a national championship team. I mean, this is a team that has a storied history, like 49 national titles. So what does that type of history, you know, how does that speak to the program? What do you say with that?
So the 49 national titles are across all the sports within our athletic department.
I see. Okay.
But, you know, in recent years, men's basketball did it in 2019, and then it's been us. And so we're kind of leading that championship charge at our university. Within our team, we have six now. And I would say, you know, it's really special. When I was in college, the team that we were always trying to top was lacrosse, and they were a huge rival, and they have such a long legacy of being number one. And so to be here now, at this point, after everything we've been through for the last couple of years, as a society, I feel like this has been an amazing journey. At times I didn't know, you know, what was meant for us. But now to see this on the other side, it's been pretty special.
Kaylee, when you were a freshman, the season was shortened due to COVID. And then last year you helped win a national title. What has it been like for you to go through a pandemic and still stay true and focused to your sport?
Freshman year was pretty tough, just coming in during COVID and everything. I think it made me understand how much more special like a real season is, and having a national championship and being able to fight for that. Because freshman year, we only got, I think, four meets. It really just helped me put into perspective how amazing even D3 gymnastics is. I also think it helps just as a team, like we wanted it more. It helps push us to want it more, to work harder the next year, just because we had lost some time. So,
Lauren, you know, your student athletes are ineligible for scholarship money in D3, Division III sports. What draws athletes to compete without the scholarships, without that financial boost?
I would say a lot of student athletes compete without scholarships. So what we see on TV is the minority in college athletics. So I think it's the experience that we can provide here. Everybody wants this family dynamic, and I would say that the one we have is pretty special. Everybody's families are different, so family dynamic means something different to everybody. But I think when they come here to this community in Oshkosh and then meet our team and meet people within the athletic department, they feel a sense of, you know, belonging. And I think that that kind of sells itself. To be able to get these high performing athletes into Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
Can you zoom out for a moment? Are women's gymnastics teams at the college level, are they growing? Are they shrinking? Are they plateauing? What is their status?
So I've been here for 16 years. At one point it was shrinking, then it plateaued, and now it's growing, actually. We just added five schools to college gymnastics as a whole. And I mean, I just see it continuing to grow because enrollment numbers at a lot of private institutions are going down. And so some are having to close their doors, and adding sports is a way to guarantee that you're going to get a certain number of students in every year. So we're seeing an increase in our sport of programs for that reason.
Lauren Karnitz, head gymnastics coach, UW Oshkosh. We have gymnast Kaylee Burns on the team. Join in with your questions and comments about gymnastics, especially at the college level, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. You It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The UW-Oshkosh women's gymnastics program, they won their second consecutive Division III national championship in Winona, Minnesota recently. Join in with your questions and comments along the way. 800-642-1234. We have gymnast Kaylee Burns, UW-Oshkosh Junior from Colorado, and Lauren Karnitz, head gymnastics coach at UW-Oshkosh. Kaylee, you know, gymnastics can take a physical toll. How do you avoid injuries or long-term physical effects from this sport?
So I actually did have a minor injury this past season. I pulled my groin, but we have an awesome athletic trainer and staff. And so I think really just taking care of our body and making sure we get in to see them when needed. Also just like getting enough sleep, taking care of ourselves in general. I think Lauren also does a good job of, if we're hurting, like in the gym, just doing exactly what we need to do, nothing extra, no extra pounding and stuff like that. So
no extra pounding. And you're really a successful competitor on uneven bars and balance beam. What is your advice for someone training ahead of an athletic competition, especially on bars and beam?
I think one of the main things that I've learned is to just trust yourself. Trust your training, not to overthink anything. Also, just to stay calm. And I get super anxious, I think, about things. And one of the hardest things for me was definitely learning to just breathe and stay in the moment, do exactly what I knew how to do in competitions, and then just do my best in practice, work hard. So,
Lauren, what comes up for you? Where is that line between pushing an athlete to get better and pushing an athlete to a point of injury or burnout?
I would say we've done a really good job managing the balance. It is a lot of trying to figure out the individual athlete. With Kaylee in particular, she handles a lot more than what she probably should. So it's trying to say, okay, that was great, but you only get this many chances to do it today, because I know that she'll keep going for an hour on something if it's not right. And so just paying attention to the type of athlete that I have and kind of pushing and pulling back when needed with their personalities. I think that sometimes as a group, you know, Kaylee will attest to this, earlier in the season, they were doing a lot of group beam routines because as a group, they were not making it. And at times it seemed like a little much, but there was the need for that. I mean, we won nationals because of beam. And I think that that made them stronger emotionally by saying, no, we don't get to be done until everybody does it today.
Mm. I want to get both of your reactions to mental health and rewind for a moment to the Tokyo Olympics in 2021, where Simone Biles withdraws from the women's team final and realizing the mental's not there, Simone said. How did that decision affect gymnastics culture, Kaylee, surrounding mental health?
I think there's a lot that I saw on it. And I think it kind of just was a good reminder that you have to take care of yourself mentally and you have to pay attention to where you are mentally to be able to perform at your best. I think it helps me just personally as an athlete kind of step back and be like, okay, how do I feel about like gymnastics mentally? When is it too much to push yourself? And so I think it really just started that conversation, especially in gymnastics. So
Lauren, what came up for you when you saw that transpire with Simone Biles?
I do think that her level of gymnastics is a little different than what we deal with on a daily basis. Yes, we have individuals that have, we call them mental blocks, where they struggle to get to the next next skill or can't actually visually see themselves doing their skill. We haven't had too much of a problem here just because the pressure level is a little different than in elite gymnastics. And then also given everything she was dealing with USA Gymnastics and her lawsuits and, you know, trying to do it for a country that didn't protect her.
You're reflecting there on Larry Nassar.
Correct. Yeah, there was a lot, I think, that went into her situation. And we do have to deal with some of that at this level. But I think what we try to do is just give them the best experience for the last 4 years of their career. So if they don't want to do an event, you know, Kaylee was struggling on vault physically, you know, her body was not holding up. So we removed it. You know, it's not the end of the world if we don't do every event, you know. In Division III college gymnastics, we can specialize a little more because we can have more individuals on the team than before and stuff like that. So when it comes to gymnastics and mental health, I think we all have pieces of it, but I think it was definitely magnified at her level because of the stressors that she was under.
Head coach Lauren Karnitz, gymnast Kaylee Burns, reflecting on the UW-Oshkosh women's team recently winning back-to-back national titles. 800-642-1234 to join in. Lauren, I don't want this conversation to get away, just to ask you about the Title IX and that milestone getting so much attention on the 50th anniversary and the impact of how it's changed women athletes, how this law has change gender discrimination. What do you think Title IX has meant for gymnastics?
I think gymnastics has been special because it's one of those sports that was developed like really strong in the female realm, where the men's gymnastics realm is not as popular. So we are really lucky that we have a sport that is just a wildly popular for women's gymnastics, for women. So I think we are lucky in that regard compared to, you know, basketball, where men's basketball is what really launched it. For us, women's gymnastics has always been one of the top performing Olympic sports, you know, on the spectator front. But I feel like, you know, Title IX has been really special this year in particular, because I've been able to look back and just remind my athletes, when I was in high school, I had to pole vault with a helmet on, but the boys did not. You know, so when I did track, there was that difference there, that and no one can believe that I had to do that, you know, compared to the boys. The boys did not have to wear a helmet and pole vault. It was a rule only for the girls because it was new. And, you know, I guess they had to protect the girls over the boys. I don't know. And that wasn't that long ago. Where in gymnastics, I haven't seen as much of the, you know, the, I guess, discrimination that we've seen in, you know, even women's soccer or
other sports.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us. And once again, congratulations to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Lauren Karnitz, head gymnastics coach at UW-Oshkosh. Kaylee Burns on the team, junior majoring in business management. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.